Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
It is amazing sometimes the obstacles that we run into when we're desiring to impact somebody's life. The obstacles we run into most often are, well, the people whose life we're trying to impact. It really is amazing that the relationships we have to build, the things that, well, the obstacles that stand between us, the things that keep us from having deep and impactful relationships are often the stories that we tell, or the ones we don't tell, the ones we refuse to tell, or the ones that we tell that are not heard the way they're told. So interesting aspects there, and that's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and one of the challenges that I find when it comes to being a strong leader and being a communicator is understanding that not everybody's on the same page. I mean, you can go into any negotiation, any relationship, any speaking engagement, any coaching engagement, and find that the things that you say are, well, they're not always heard the way that you said them. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But the truth is, and the hard part is, if you study communication, you study people long enough, you'll realize that it's always going to be the case, number one. And number two, it's always the responsibility, not always the fault, but always the responsibility of the communicator. In fact, John Maxwell's book, one of his most powerful books, is called Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And the reason that that statement is true is because it's really hard as a communicator to know exactly what the, for lack of a better word, triggers are in someone else. Sometimes those triggers have to do with trauma from the past. Sometimes they have to do with existing relationships that become comparisons. Sometimes they have to do with the political season that we're in. Is it an election season? Is the media pounding on one idea versus another? Maybe it's climate control. Maybe it's banking policies. Maybe it's immigration policies. Maybe it's the homeless. Maybe it's medical attention or Medicare or drugs and diseases or national pandemics. See, every one of these individual aspects impacts the individual in their life and often impacts them at a deep emotional level. If you think I'm kidding, just think back 3 or 4 years about, will you get the supposed cure for CV-19? Oh, will you not? Will you stand in line and get poked in the arm? Or will you not? That, and the vitriolic responses on both sides of that fence, do you get it or do you don't get it? Everybody had their causes, had their reasons, had their arguments, had their justifications, had their deep emotional stories. Everybody had someone who had gotten it and got sick or didn't get it and died. Everybody had their story. Now, the challenge as a communicator at the front of the room on the Zoom call in a negotiation is that everybody has their story. And there are going to be some who, well, they don't jive with your story. They don't resonate with your story. Remember, like the car accident, like the argument, like the misunderstanding, like the sales negotiation, like the courtroom, like the arbitration or the mediator. Three people see exactly the same thing from exactly the same standpoint, geographically, physically. They were there when it happened. And they walk away with 3 or maybe 6 or 12 different stories of what happened and who said what and why did it happen that way. And the challenge is when we get caught up in that as participants, as people, as, well, humans, we find that those stories, well, they all carry a whole lot of emotional weight, a whole lot of baggage, for lack of a better term. Now, we also have to remember that because of the stories that we have from our past, maybe it's the pains of the past or the successes of the past, the traumas or the triumphs, those stories are still resonating in our head. And those stories become the subcontext of the story that you're telling as a communicator. And so when you come to me and tell me a story about a classic car, I either resonate and say, I love classic cars. In fact, I had this one, or I had that one, or I have this one, or I want to get that one. That could be entirely different than if my story of a classic car was the one that, I don't know, my parents spent all the money on and so I didn't get to go to college. Or my dad spent every waking minute on and I never got to spend any time with him. Or was stolen. We had a classic car that sat in our front yard for, I don't know, probably a year and a half while someone in our family was serving a little time for some stupid mistakes. And that car belonged to them. Well, my mom got tired of it sitting there. Didn't think about what it was, just knew it was sitting in the front yard and she didn't like it there. So somebody walked by one day and said, hey, I'd love to buy that old car from you. She said, I don't even know if it runs. He said, I don't care if it runs. It looks like a good project car. I'd like to rebuild it. She said, okay, give me $500 and you can take it. That was a 1969 Pontiac GTO. Fully restored right now, that particular car could pull somewhere around $75,000. The day that it was sold for $500, it was easily worth $2,000. And if you could have started it up and driven it away, $3,000 to $5,000. But $500 got it out of her yard and she was happy on both sides. She had no emotional attachment to that car. Zero. Zip, zilch, nada. All she knew was it's sitting in my yard and I don't like it there. See, the big difference between the story that you tell about that car, it might be the car you got your first date in. It might be the car that you proposed to your spouse in. It might be the car that was passed down in the family. I told a story recently of a classic Mustang that was in our family. It was bought by my grandmother. And based on its model year and its manufactured date, couldn't have been bought too much different from my birth date, my original day I was born date. I would have loved to have had that car and be able to say it's a one owner. It's never left the family. But at some point, my dad decided he was going to restore it. So he put it in storage and then forgot about it, got busy with life and moved on and ended up giving it to the storage lot for the fees that he owed. Out of the family, it's gone. Somebody's going to have to put a lot of money in to restore it. The odds I'll ever see it again, probably zero. That could have an emotional baggage attachment if you're not careful. But see, we can go from classic cars to dating relationships to the way we remember the first McDonald's, the drive-ups. I remember living in Enid, Oklahoma when I was a kid, and we used to ride our bicycles 4 or 5 miles to get to Big Chief. Now, I always remembered the Big Chief notebooks, but there was a drive-up drive-in restaurant called Big Chief. And you could go there and get the biggest cherry limeades ever for like a quarter. And we would ride all the way across town and go to the little magic store and get the invisible ink and silly stuff like that. And stop at Big Chief because for a quarter we could get a big gigantic cherry limeade and that'd be enough to get us home on. Not everybody had Big Chief. So when I say Big Chief, that it doesn't mean anything. Others might have had an A&W. I still, when I run across one and see an A&W, there's something nostalgic to me about the A&W root beer, the smell and the taste of it tickling your nose, and a foot-long coney with chili cheese and onions on top. Not a regular fare kind of thing. Not something you want to eat every day, but there's something nostalgic because that's something we used to do as a family. We'd load up in the station wagon, we'd go to the A&W drive-in, and we would sit there in the car and eat our foot-long conies and drink A&W root beer. And that was a special season for us. All right. You see how these stories begin to, they seep back into your life. Maybe it wasn't A&W or Big Chief for you. Maybe it was Sonic. Maybe you lived in a part of the country where there was White Castle. I personally have never had a White Castle burger. I hear they're all the rage, but for decades I'd never had an In-N-Out burger, but I heard they were all the rage until they came to Texas. But see, there's something in your mind that attaches you to that moment, to that event, to that geography. And in that space, there's a story. Now, if that story is not a good one, the impact of someone telling a story about Big Chief or A&W or White Castle, that's going to be a huge impact. And if it's a bad story, if that's where something tragic happened, if someone who was a friend of yours got killed in a drive-by at one of those drive-ins, that changes everything about the way you recall that space. If you can't stand root beer today because of something that happened when you were a kid at one of those places, that changes everything. But see, as a storyteller, as a communicator, I don't know that. I don't have any idea. And so as a storyteller, I have to be a little more cautious about the things that could randomly trigger someone else to feel or think or respond or react to something in my story. And part of the way that I go about that is doing what I can to understand how people think. As a communicator, it's not just telling the world what I think, it's understanding how they think. As a storyteller, I've got to select a story that matches the audience in front of me, and then I've got to tell it in a way that it's impactful to them. It takes to them the emotional set that I want them to receive, that it takes them to a place in their emotions, in their heart, in their memory, in their thoughts, that they want to go to, so they don't reject, so they don't argue, so they don't push back. Now, honestly, most of the time, unless you're doing one-on-one, like I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, unless you're doing that, most of the time when you say something that offends someone, a friend, a one-on-one client might say, hold up, I don't like the way you said that because of the way it makes me feel. When you're speaking in front of an audience, in a sales negotiation, in a transactional relationship, in a one-time kind of, we're in passing, I'm going to speak from the platform about what my ideas are, or I'm going to sell this item to you, or I want you to get buy-in, or maybe you're a leader and you're talking to your team, but when you tell that story and it offends someone, it hurts them, it pokes at their sensibilities and their values in life, the odds that you're actually going to get that feedback, very, very small. It's unlikely that they'll say anything. Now, that doesn't mean they're not hurt. It doesn't mean they're not holding on to it. And it doesn't mean that you did it intentionally or that it's your fault. In fact, often the emotional triggers that we have are based on some past relationship, some past event that we haven't completely dealt with. And we all have them. We all have them. Nobody is above bad past memories. Nobody. And as much as you try to forgive them, forget about them, and move on with your life, they still exist. And when they get poked on, it's like that grass burr that you never remove, that splinter in your finger, the pain is still there, the infection is still there, everything comes back. And sometimes what causes that to come back is a single word. Sometimes it's an emotional expression, a turn of phrase, a reminder of a geography that you've tried to forget about, a specific kind of inference or reference. Idioms and axioms sometimes. The things that we say that we believe, the rich get richer, the poor go broke, those things can be triggers. And I don't just mean, I agree with that or I disagree with that. They can be things that genuinely cause people emotional pain. So I brought a couple of the books that are, I mean, they're just, goodness, if you could see my library, well, there's a bit of a shot of my library. That's a third of it. But these books are books that I've been studying, and I noticed that you can't see them super clear. I'm going to hold up a couple of them. I study through books like this for the purpose of understanding that it's not always what I think that matters. Sometimes it's what other people think. So here's one. This one's called The Troublemakers. The Righteous Troublemakers, Untold Stories of the Social Justice Movement in America. Given to us by Reverend Al Sharpton. Here's one for the opposite side of a similar kind of a conversation, Facts Don't Care About Your Feelings by Ben Shapiro, an attorney. How about this one? The Parasitic Mind. This is by Gad Saad. Gad Saad is a PhD, one of the best known public intellectuals fighting the tyranny of political correctness. Professor of marketing at the John Molson School of Business at Concordia. A whole different kind of way of looking at the world than I have. Rejection Proof by Jia Zhang. And this book is all about the different kinds of relationships. Rejection Proof smashes fears in the face of a 1-2 punch. You'll laugh out loud at Jia's crazy social experiments, but you'll also go away thinking differently about what you can accomplish. Interesting ways of looking at the world. Not the way I've always looked at the world. Not the way I grew up. And so reading these books, You Can Read Anyone by David Lieberman. You Can Read Anyone. That's about learning the skills and the techniques of actually paying attention and observation, listening to specific words, because people tend to use the trigger words that trigger them. Did you know that? Yeah, they do. They tend to repeat them, usually in a derogatory way. Or they reflect on them and deflect them by using counterintuitive words to say the same thing. As someone might say, well, criminal justice and real justice are not the same thing. Hang on. Criminal justice, but it has the same word in it. Well, criminal justice and social justice, those are different. In fact, the criminal justice system is criminal in itself, and social justice is really the way we should go. And that's kind of a sentiment that follows the concept of let's defund the police and change the laws to put less people in jail. In some places, that's led to utter chaos. Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. This is a former, I believe he was CIA or FBI negotiator for hostages. Genius of a guy, brilliant mind, but he spent his entire life studying people. There are books over here, Henry Beckwith's Selling the Invisible. Some of those books are all about the words we use in a sales tactic, in a sales negotiation, in a sales process. Why? Because stories have impact. Stories are negotiable. Stories lead people down a direct path or a meandering path. But see, well-selected and well-told stories, they have stickiness. And so sometimes the impact isn't in the classroom or in the auditorium or on the podcast. Sometimes the impact of a well-told story, well, it sits with you for a minute. It's sticky. It's like those traveling seeds I talked about in the previous episodes. That traveling seed that gets caught in your whiskers and your doggy's whiskers, and it goes with them until you intentionally pull it out, and it ends up someplace entirely different than where it started off. It was designed that way. A story should be as well. A well-selected, well-told story looks at the audience, understands at least a minimal of what their worldviews, their core values, their sentiments, their mentalities are, and delivers a story to them that carries a strong teaching point, perhaps, or a strong call to action, and says, here's what I want you to do next. And understanding that sometimes that's not going to happen in 2 to 5 to 10 minutes. It's not going to happen at the back of the room. It's not going to happen today at all. It might not happen for another couple of weeks or months or a decade. But a well-selected, well-told story fits the old axiom. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That doesn't mean the teacher hasn't been there all along. It might have been your best friend. Might have been your next-door neighbor. Might have been your boss that you didn't even like. Might have been your coworker who's been competing for the same job. That might be the one sent to teach you. But the teaching won't happen because the learning won't happen until the student is ready. And sometimes that's our own internal delays. It's our own immaturity. It's our own frustrations with life. It's our own irritations in life. And we put up walls and we say, you know, I'm not going to go that way. I'm not going to do that thing. I don't want to be led that way. I don't want to give in to that. And then we realize later, if I'd given in to that idea years before, my life would be completely different. I was listening to somebody just today who said somebody they were coaching with had married someone, been married 15 years, and 15 years into the marriage, one spouse said to the other one, I never wanted to have kids. I don't intend to. And now the spouse who wanted to have kids is thinking, I very painfully have to admit I've invested 15 years, some great years, some great time, but I've invested 15 years of my life that I can't get back in a childless marriage. That's not what I wanted. If we talked about those goals up front, then I would have chosen differently. Wow. 15 years is time you can't get back. But see, sometimes those stories stick with you and they stay with you. And then it may be 20, 25 years from now that individual looks back and thinks, man, I wish I'd had my kids, not at 40 years old, but at 25. That's going to be a huge difference. They're graduating from high school as you're retiring. That's going to be a challenge. But the fun of life sometimes is just being willing to never split the difference. Figure out exactly what are your core values. What are the things that are most important to you? What are your trigger words? And sometimes that ability to lead through stories, to manage people through stories, to find new clients through stories, to deliver an idea and gain buy-in, whether it's from the stage or on a podcast or in an individual coaching session. It happens through stories. And the impact that's necessary to do that, for some people it can be jarring impact. You've got to brace for the impact. You've got to know that sometimes to get the results that you want, that your client wants, there's going to be some stories that, well, they challenge the way you think right now. They're going to really kind of push your buttons and make you think, do I want to continue on the path that I'm on, or do I want this new idea, this new change? John Maxwell says it, and I think he got it from somebody else, so I'll just give you the paraphrase of the quote. It says something along the lines of, change never happens until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing. Change never happens in your life until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of making the change. Now, the stories that we tell, well-told stories, well-selected stories, they inspire people to move forward in a new idea, to do something they've never done before, to make a change, to transform their lives into something better. That's why we lead. That's why we speak. That's why we communicate. That's why we write books. That's why we coach. And if you're a storyteller, your stories should have that desire, the impact for lasting change in somebody's life. You have to know that sometimes that impact is first going to hurt them. It's going to affect them. It's going to trigger them. And for a season, like a kid with a grass burr kicking you in the face with one foot while you're trying to get the grass burr out of the other foot. Been there, done that. They're going to have to tolerate the pain, and you're going to have to be willing to administer. You're going to have to deliver a story that shakes them, that jars them, that maybe hurts them, that perhaps offends them, that triggers them to reevaluate, how do we get here? And for whatever necessary change is coming forward, how do we get forward? That's a powerful aspect of storytelling you've got to be willing to master. Now, sometimes those negotiations aren't as complicated as they sound. One of the shows my wife and I love to watch is the Barter Kings, where they actually trade a small something for another something for another something for another something. And on a regular basis, they'll run into somebody who will say, well, you know, the value of what I have is so much greater than the value of what you have, and so you're going to have to come with some cash. And they're always very clear, we don't do cash. And recently they had a guy that they had dealt with him in the past, and he was a real jerk. And they knew in dealing with the guy this time, he was going to be a real jerk. They used a different word for that. But when it came down to the final deal, he said, if you want what I have, then you're going to have to get me one of those. And they looked at what they had in inventory, and they're like, yeah, that's a big ask, but we want what you have, so we'll get busy doing it. And they made the steps, and they made the trades, and every time trading up a little bit, making a little more margin, a little more profit into a little larger product. And eventually they got exactly what he wanted, which was, I believe he called it a sky crane or a boom lift, something like that. So he could clean windows on the fifth and sixth floors of these buildings downtown. What he had was basically a party boat. A little bit different in value, but not significantly. But when they got down to the negotiation, he's like, you're going to have to come with some cash. They said, you know, we don't come with cash. We've done this before. They said, well, then you're going to have to prove to me that it has the value that it has. And in the negotiation, aside from the silliness of, well, you're going to have to get in the boom with me and go up, we've got to test it, make sure it goes to full extension. And the guy that he made get in the booth was also afraid of heights. That was a get out of your comfort zone trigger moment for him. He white-knuckled it all the way up and white-knuckled it all the way down and then said, are we done with this deal or not? Because I'm done with you. Well, that's sometimes in our negotiations, we've got to be willing to bite the bullet and do the hard thing too. But they also helped him to remember that the boat was making him no money. And since he was already making money window cleaning, adding this lift to his business, it wasn't just about the value of the two items. It was the value of the future potential earning possibilities. If you can look at the thing you're trading into and say, this is not just exchanging this bad habit for this bad habit, this old relationship for this new relationship, this way of being for this way of being. It's not about that. It's about the long-term objectives and the profitability of what will happen when I do. He gave up his boat. He got this new sky lift so he can take on these new customers. And you can only imagine the minute you can go beyond the second or third floor window, which is about all you can do with a ladder, and you can go to the 5 and the 6 and the 7 story buildings, all of a sudden he's got a whole lot larger game plan and a whole lot larger customer base. Oh yeah, there's a price to be paid to get there. You're going to have to give up something to move forward. You got to be willing to do that. But if you're willing to do that, the opportunity is there. And if you're willing to do that, you can make some dramatic and drastic changes in the way you do business and the way you live your life. The story that you tell, it's going to both identify where you're at now and where you want to go. And the story you're going to tell as a leader, as a communicator, as a coach, it's going to have to impact people pretty deeply, maybe right away, maybe a little down the line. But everybody should brace for impact. You as a deliverer to be able to select and deliver the right story, and them as the receiver to be able to hear that story knowing this might hurt, this might challenge me, but it's going to be worth it in the end. Take the time to craft your stories. Do your homework on people and the way they think. Understand what their triggers are, their trigger words, their trigger emotions, and perhaps even spend some time figuring out how they're going to respond when you trigger them. That'll take you a long way down the road to moving them toward buying or trusting you as opposed to being offended and walking away from you. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you. Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.